Questions. We're going to link to your piece in The Nation. Amy Littlefield, an independent freelance journalist, formerly Democracy Now! Producer. That does it for our show. Happy birthday to Libby Rainey. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Nina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Carla Wills, Tammy Woronoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Adriano Contreras. Special thanks to Julie Crows, Rebecca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. If you did not see those baby pictures that Amy was showing, there's nothing wrong with your radio. But now it's time for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined this evening by Kyle.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing yourself.
Okay, I don't understand that.
I'm doing all right.
You're doing okay. You're doing all right.
I'm doing the thing.
Don't have to dwell on it.
I'm doing radio at the moment. How about yourself?
I'm doing the same thing for some reason, and doing just fine. Thank you very much for asking.
I was just reading some thoughts from our president about this really distinct moment in time.
President of the university?
Yeah, or President McKinnon.
The president of the show.
No.
Which is not us, by the way.
Not.
And you don't mean the nation.
No. The university here, the Stony Brook.
Okay.
An announcement reflecting on the year that has transpired. And depending on how you calculate it, when the news and all that about the pandemic was occurring, but really it was the 11th of March, I believe, that was actually declared a pandemic. By who? By who?
WHO.
WHO,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's another month. March has begun. And I'm feeling a bit more optimistic about the way things are going. More and more people getting the vaccine, and the numbers are getting better. It's not for lack of trying, though, to make those numbers worse. Oh, my God, the idiocy that I'm seeing, both locally and on the national level, and internationally in addition. We have to be careful. I mean, we're very fortunate that there are vaccines, but we could still screw this up tremendously if we don't take precautions, because we don't know yet people who are vaccinated could still be carriers. And imagine what that could mean. We've seen the numbers go down quite a bit in the past couple of months. But guess what? They're leveling off now. And that's because of stupidity. So please continue to wear your mask. Continue to practice social distancing. Continue to take precautions until we get to the point of herd immunity or more people being immunized than not, where we actually can get a handle on things. And it'll be great when that happens. But jumping the gun, boy, that's the worst thing you can do at this point in time. Please get that vaccine.
Sure. It's around you. If you qualify, there are many locations and avenues to pursue and definitely help others.
If you know somebody who qualifies, help them. Because you're helping yourself as well by helping them.
Yeah, it'll speed up the process, and it will help you, especially if you're in their orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the reflection overall, though, in the past year, what has happened has been horrifying, but a little harrowing at the same time, to see people really try to get a handle on this phenomena. And there have been missteps. And there have been a lot of lessons to learn.
Absolutely.
I'm really kind of, I feel some pride, some accomplishment in having the ability to look back at it.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing thing, just to be able to breathe and witness what has occurred. But also, I'm aware of it's been, you know, difficult on a lot of individuals, a lot of families, a lot of businesses.
And we've seen
your mental sort of overall well-being, checking in and remembering things.
We've seen the best in a lot of people. We've also seen the worst, and nobody has gotten it right. We didn't get it right. I mean, do you remember at the beginning, we did a show at BAI where, you know, we burst in wearing masks as a joke because it hadn't gotten to that stage, and nobody thought it would.
Well, it was sort of a half joke. I mean, we were...
It was a funny joke. It was. At the time, it was funny. But now it's not funny.
But we were talking about it 3 months prior. I mean, we had traveled a bit and were aware that there were people...
Not 3 months prior. Maybe 2 months.
2 months.
At the most.
I'm sorry. 3 weeks at least.
But we were being told, don't wear masks. That's not the right thing to do.
But we knew people around the world were taking those precautions,
right?
Because they were in the proximity of a lot of viral infection and circulation of the disease.
The point is, when something is unfolding,
right.
You you don't get it right entirely. No leader gets it right, and that's why you know you can't point really anywhere. Again, with the exception of New Zealand. And maybe Taiwan, places where the leaders did everything right from the beginning. But you can measure degrees. You can measure people working the best with what they had, and then people who just blatantly ignored the facts and tried to just push back against that and didn't really care about the people. I think we all know who we're talking about.
All of that is seared so deeply in my memory.
We can't forget that. We can't rewrite history. We have to remember these things. It's important. Anyway, this morning, did you see some of the hearing this morning? FBI Director Christopher Wray?
I did watch
I always
that.
Want to call him Christopher Robin. I'm just, I know so few Christophers. Now, a lot of Chris's, but no Christopher. Christopher Wray is the FBI Director.
Christopher Wray?
Yeah. And he was in front of a bunch of senators talking about January 6th, the Capitol riot. And, you know, actually having to answer the question of, was it Antifa? Was it actually a bunch of leftists disguising themselves as a bunch of rightists? And he emphatically said, no, that was not the case. That's not what happened at all. You think that'll be the end of it? Of course not. As long as Fox News is around, it'll never be the end. Speaking of Fox News, you know, I was looking at this. It was on CNN. It was on MSNBC. It was on C-SPAN. Fox News had a panel discussion on Dr. Seuss.
Really? Because what happened with
Dr.
Seuss?
They are outraged. They are outraged that Dr. Seuss is being canceled.
Is Dr. Seuss still practicing, though?
Look, Dr. Seuss Foundation or Corporation or whatever it is they are, they decided today not to publish six of their books because they're racist. They decided. It's not some cabal of left-wing zealots going out there and saying, you no longer exist. No, it's the people who publish the book saying, this isn't right. We shouldn't be doing this anymore, and we're not going to. Completely responsible behavior. And the people on the right are outraged by this. You know, if they're not talking about Mr. Potato Head, now they're talking about Dr. Seuss. These are the issues to them. It's so insane and crazy.
I think it was Aunt Jemima not so long ago either.
I'm sure they were upset by that as well.
Yeah, it was terrifying and tragic.
They want their hateful images. They want their hateful images to be preserved. But I didn't know this. I didn't know this about Dr. Seuss. I mean, I knew there was some issues. I didn't know it was quite this bad.
What ones were they? They must have anyone who grew up with that stuff must have come across one or the other.
Okay,
of those
I'll name the books. I'm sure people will run to eBay to try to get them.
No, I mean, don't promote it necessarily, I guess.
Well, I don't see how I'm not promoting it by saying
that. You're not reading a link to go buy it.
No,
you could say
I just told people eBay, and if you type that into eBay, you will be able to buy it. But it might cost you $1,000. I don't know.
Maybe people want to disappear those books, so you need to give them the title so they can disappear them.
I'm as curious as anybody. I want to know what's in them, and I'm going to tell you what's in them, okay, because I do have some information.
Yeah, which
here.
Stories, though?
But the books are, it's actually the very first book written under the name Dr. Seuss. By the way, does anybody know the real name of Dr. Seuss?
I can't remember. I know it was a pseudonym.
Boy, that's clever. That makes it seem like you actually know what it is. You know it's a pseudonym. Of course it's a pseudonym. And, yeah, I don't remember at the moment.
Well,
now you're looking it up on the internet.
That's just off the top of my head. No, I was just stretching.
You can't test people anymore.
Okay,
his real name is Theodore Seuss.
Seuss.
Yeah, Seuss is in there.
Yeah.
Can you even say the last name, Kyle? No, you didn't
no
get
Ted. It's
Theodore,
everybody knows.
Theodore Seuss Geisel. Or Geisel. And what's unusual about Theodore?
Oh, well, it's
you know, we only have an hour. It doesn't have an E at the end. That's what's unusual about it. Okay, so here's the first book that he wrote, And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street, from 1937. And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street. That's an interesting name.
Okay, all right.
If I Ran the Zoo, from 1950. That's the second one. The other books are McGilligut's Pool, On Beyond Zebra, with an exclamation point. Scrambled Eggs Super, exclamation point. Don't panic, it's not green eggs and ham. And finally, The Cat's Quizzer. Oh, okay. Well, so here's an example. And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street, a character described as a Chinaman has lines for eyes, wears a pointed hat, and carries chopsticks and a bowl of rice. Think we can do without that? Yeah, probably. Do we condemn Dr. Seuss? No, I don't think we should. I don't think that's right, because he basically acknowledged this himself while he was alive and was fairly ashamed by it. So, you know, I think people can learn. People can definitely become educated in their later years. And you know, this goes for the entire culture as well.
Well, and don't co-opt it and freak out over it because it meets some political end that makes you a victim of something in some weird tangential way, right?
Mm-hmm. So let's see, what else do we have? If I ran the zoo, two characters from the African island of Yurka are depicted as shirtless, shoeless, and resembling monkeys. Yeah, so this serves nobody to keep publishing books like that. Remember them. We remember that these books were published. We learn from these ugly moments. But there's no reason to have these things continue to come out, obviously. So that's what happened. Dr. Seuss Today, Dr. Seuss Enterprises, decided they weren't going to publish these six books. And great, I applaud them for this. But the right wing is upset. Why are they upset by this? They really want this racist material to continue being published.
Well, it's not just that. It's that, like, they would be continuing to make money, theoretically, I think. I mean, that's the sort of worst part of it, is that this is your business. We're going to perpetuate these kinds of stories and stereotypes, and that's going to be a part of your business. I mean, they aren't, in seriousness, they're not actually disappearing. They still exist in one form or another. And the outrage is totally misplaced, like you're saying. Like, this shouldn't be something that's a part of their product list.
Yeah, but it's not something they represent. Why is the right wing outraged by this, by Dr. Seuss Enterprises themselves making a decision that this is hateful, this is ignorant, we don't want to perpetuate this anymore, and we're going to stop. What happens to the free enterprise system where you decide what you want to do? You know, are they being accused of canceling themselves? What exactly is the outrage here? And it really goes back to what the right wing has gotten very good at in this country, and that's just changing the narrative completely. So it's not about what Dr. Seuss Enterprises, I can't believe we're talking about this, but it's not what Dr. Seuss Enterprises did today. It's about what they can twist it into meaning and somehow convincing people that it wasn't Dr. Seuss Enterprises that did it, even though it was, but rather some shrill left-wing intimidating person that's going to take away your house and everything that you fought. I don't know. Basically, somebody that you can hate and fear. It's their fault. They're doing this. They're behind this. And they're coming for you next. That's what they're doing. And they get away with it time and time and time again. They had a whole damn convention over the weekend where they did nothing but this. We'll get into that in a minute. But just, you know, to put this to rest, Mr. Geisel, Dr. Seuss, wasn't even a doctor, Mr. Geisel, he said, decades after these were published, he was embarrassed by the cartoons, which he said were full of snap judgments that every political cartoonist has to make. Actually, he was referring to when he drew political cartoons for New York-based newspaper PM from 1941 to 1943. He was embarrassed by that as well, and by what he did with in his early years. So, I mean, that's a lesson right there.
Sure is, yeah, and the reductionism, I think, is and the changing the narrative into something so silly and stupid that it makes people feel like the shrill voice has this super unbelievable power that they can do anything if you don't stop them, and that rallies and then becomes this harboring of disdain and resentment for the other side, when it's not really the case. It's that I think people don't want to perpetuate this stuff anymore because they see what it's led to. The kinds of adults that are so sure of really irrational fears that being real,
mm-hmm,
about races and communities they may not even have ever met or really truly understand other than through you know, stereotypes or memes or, you know, stuff that's pretty wrong. And the shrill people are shrill children who will go and read these books. No, I'm serious. They're going to grow up and they need stories. They need to have an understanding of the actual world they're going to live in. And, you know, their boss or their teachers may be people of color, or maybe, you know, have an ability or some represent some community that they need to have a base understanding of in the future as the country and the world changes and grows. So I just find that, you know, they're convenient boogeyman in the opposition. It's just a lazy way to make a caricature of this all-powerful thing in the left when that's not it. It's just people evolving collectively, all of us.
Right, and we are evolving. Even you know, 4 years under Trump, we evolved. You know, gay marriage was accepted. Marijuana legalization accepted. All sorts of things changing despite what the political trends might tell you.
You know, I found toothpaste with hemp in it.
Yeah, you were very proud of that. You found.
I was like so happy. I was like, they got me. This is on
hemp oil, right? And toothpaste now.
Isn't that awesome?
What a world! What a world this is turning into. So yeah, you know, we are evolving in many ways. Some serious, some not so serious, and that is sometimes in direct contradiction to what we are being told politically on TV. I mean, if you watched CPAC this weekend, I watched a little bit of it just, you know, out of just for guilty pleasures. You would think that the communists are at the gates. You know, there aren't even communists in communist countries anymore. I mean, come on, the Soviet Union doesn't exist. The Iron Curtain, it's no longer there. Communism is not a thing. The only people who think it's a thing are dried up old leftists who are about as delusional as the people on the right. Okay, it's not a thing. There are other things, and there's all kinds of movements for social justice, but communism ain't it. But you would never know that by watching the right wing. They are convinced, or they are trying to convince you, that people like Joe Biden are communists. I mean, look at Joe Biden. You could not find somebody who is more of a, you know, Saturday Evening Post cover type of person. You know what I mean?
That's not to say he isn't receptive to ideas about socialist values and social justice in general.
Yeah,
right?
but to label those as either socialist or communist is completely being inaccurate. A library is socialist. But when's the last time you went down to the socialist library of East Setauket? You know, they don't call it that. You know, it's not something. Socialism, communism, yeah, all different forms of government and economic systems have values that we share in other forums.
I think the analogy is it's not run by the National Socialist Party, it's your local library,
right,
paid with your local tax dollars.
Socialism and communism does not own the right to share, you know what I mean? The concept of sharing. That's not inherently a communist thing, that's a human thing. All right, and yeah, there are elements where we might say we agree with their doctrine, but that doesn't mean that we are embracing everything about that. It's, you know, it's quite simple, and I think, you know, just looking at the state of the world today, it's pretty obvious that there really isn't much of a communist movement going on, and to attach that to the Democratic Party in this country is just, it's laughable. Because you've got people in the Democratic Party who are really right of center, in my opinion. Certainly, if you look at the rest of the world, and it's fear mongering is what they're doing, and it's working. That's the thing that bothers me so much, is that it works.
It's so cynical where they're at. It doesn't even really matter if it's true or not. It just
precisely
has to make Democrats or whomever the enemy is look bad,
mm-hmm,
and be so stupid and so reductionist and so simple that and laughable, as you said. I'm sure they would agree, but it, as you said, and it also said, it worked. It works, and it's hopefully losing some of that power because it's been reached such a crescendo of stupidity, but that takes work, and it needs to be recalibrated as far as how it's looked at
validated. We keep saying it's stupid, but that's no longer a winning argument. Being stupid doesn't mean that it's not going to work, because so many things seem to be stupid, and they do it anyway, and they win. You know, and how do you counter that? Well, you do the best you can. In this particular case, we watched Trump's speech over the weekend. And boy, look at this. Factcheck.org put out some corrections. Fact-checking Trump's CPAC speech.
Is that bound?
It's 10 pages long. That's longer than most speeches. 10 pages of corrections of all the... we don't have time to go through all this. But you pick something. And... Okay, I didn't know that. Running low on toner.
Oh, are we?
Look at that. Yeah, that's one thing I learned from this.
Oh, that's okay. I think there's some supplies en route.
Wow, it's just, yeah, it's unbelievable. So we don't have time to go into all the facts. Go to factcheck.org and look at Trump's CPAC speech, and you'll see all just blatant lies. But one thing he kept saying over and over and over again was that... he won the election. He's not backing down on that. And please don't be surprised, because we've been saying this literally for months, that he's not backing down. And the fact that he vacated the White House doesn't mean that he conceded the election. He did not concede the election. Here's my suggestion. He claims that he won the election. All his people down there are claiming that he won the election. They're cheering him on. They don't believe Joe Biden is the legitimate president. They believe Donald Trump is the legitimate president. Okay, so you got to make a choice here. He won the election. You believe he won the election. You believe he is the legitimate president. You believe in the Constitution. You believe in laws. Well then, he won. He won a second term. So in 2024, he can't run again. He can't run again. In fact, he even said this. He said, maybe I'll beat them a third time. No, you can't do that. That goes against the rules. All right? You know, looking away from the fact that the rules say that whoever wins the election number-wise is the elected president. Okay, let's overlook that for a second. But if we're going to accept that, then we can't accept you running again in 2024. Period.
I'm with you. No, that makes sense. I follow you.
If you want to run in 2024, you got to concede the damn election and say that I lost in 2020. Is that so hard? And if it is that hard, you're not qualified to be president. Am I saying anything that doesn't make sense?
No, that is completely... anyone supporting him should be nodding their head like, yeah, this is really loony, because what he's saying in beating them a third time is maybe, I would hope, a deep sarcasm, but I doubt it. But coming off that way, like, wow, guy, like, you really do not understand how this works, and, you know, you basically got evicted. Mm-hmm. I don't see you running things right now.
If you think that you are the legitimate leader, then you got to fight for it. You got to keep charging the Capitol. Keep it up. Keep doing it. Go ahead. We're ready. We're ready for you. You know, if this is what you really believe, do you really believe that? You really believe that the election was stolen, and you have evidence that you're not showing anybody, nobody has seen it, it hasn't appeared in a court, you claim that the courts won't hear it, okay? When courts don't hear things, that's usually just an express way of getting to a loss, where they say, you know what, this is such a ridiculous case, not even going to waste time in my courtroom with it. But if you have the evidence, go ahead. Share it. Share the evidence. You know what they do? They play tricks. I saw this happen to a CNN reporter. It's unfortunate. I forget which clone it was, one of the Republican people down there, said, so was there any fraudulent voting in the last election? Well, how do you answer that? You know, it's like, when did you stop beating your wife? There's no correct answer. Was there any fraudulent voting? Well, you can't say no, because how do you know? How do you know there was no fraudulent voting? One person does something fraudulent, and he's the only person that does something fraudulent, you know, you're incorrect. But if you say yes, well then, the next question is, how many? And of course, You don't know how many. You do know that there are extremely few, but that doesn't matter. As soon as you say there was some fraudulent voting, as in every election ever, there was some fraud somewhere, however minor. So now the person on the other side, who probably is a lawyer anyway, and they know how to do this, says, so you have no idea how many fraudulent votes there are, and you expect us to accept this. You can say that for any election ever if you accept that premise. And that's the mistake people make, is they let the other side get to that point where they trap them.
They're getting cornered over and over, whether it's like stopping the hallways or whatever, having like casual commentary or in the news.
Well,
it's wrong. It's the wrong way to look at it.
I have a solution to use in situations like that. Shut up. Stop. Don't talk anymore. I am not listening to you. You are wrong. You are an idiot. You are harmful to democracy. I am walking away now. Do not follow me. Goodbye. All these words can be used, okay? And they should be used. And I'm sorry if it hurts people's feelings. But this is ridiculous. For God's sake, where are we heading? Where no fact is acceptable anymore if it doesn't fit your particular agenda. It's disgusting. Now, we have this, what we refer to as cult-like behavior. And there are symptoms. You know, if you think you might be in a cult, there are certain signs. Like, for instance, suddenly somebody who's good is bad. You know, it's kind of like the Stalinist thing where somebody gets purged. One day, you're calling for Mike Pence's head. The next day, he's okay again. One day, Lindsey Graham is evil. Next day, he's acceptable. Same thing, Mitch McConnell. All these people that keep getting...
Excommunicated.
And then, what's the term? Refurbished. Or reinstated or something.
Reincarnated?
Maybe. And, you know, the press is evil. The press has always been evil. And whenever a certain name is said, people will shout it down. The other day at CPAC, very nice woman from the hotel they were staying at asked them to put on masks because that's the rule in the hotel. And everybody was booing and screaming at her for something as logical as stopping the pandemic from spreading. It's okay. You can still gather, even though that's not the smartest thing in the world to do. But please wear a mask and be considerate of the people around you who are kind of like you. No, that's not acceptable, because we are told that is no longer acceptable, even though when you think about it for half a second, it makes all the sense in the world to stay healthy. No one's infringing upon your rights to do anything. Just let's try and keep the contagions from spreading. No, not acceptable. The other thing that cult-like behavior often demonstrates is sudden use of a word. And this is one of my pet peeves. Seeing use of the word or the phrase Democrat Party, you know right away, if you're talking to somebody and they use the phrase Democrat Party instead of Democratic Party, you know they have drunk the Kool-Aid. Walk away, it's too late. You are not going to change anything about their opinion. Seriously, they will accept blindly whatever they are told. And the reason I say blindly is because Democrat Party makes no sense. First of all, it's a holdover from the McCarthy era. That's actually what Joe McCarthy would call the Democratic Party. He would call it the Democrat Party. It's been used as insults for quite some time. But Trump really started doubling down and using it constantly because he didn't want to call the other party Democratic, even though that is their rightful name. And it's grammar, too. Democratic is an adjective. Okay, it modifies the word party, just like Republican does. If you say Democrat, that's a noun. A noun can't modify another noun. Democrat Party doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. Just like, you know, if I said Republic Party, that wouldn't work either. George W. Bush said it, but he claims he said it by accident, and I believe him, because he said a lot of things by accident. But this mindless repetition of something that literally makes no sense. either to annoy people or to try and make some kind of statement. It doesn't further your argument in any way.
Or even as like a inside code.
Well, yeah.
A tactic to
it is inside code.
Communicate that you're affiliated.
You're one of us.
In the, like this affinity group.
Mm-hmm. And you know, this is done not just on the right wing. Obviously, it's done in groups everywhere. But it's something to look out for, because I just, it bothers me when suddenly people start parroting behavior, because that means you're not thinking for yourself. You're just mindlessly imitating, like a parrot, and it's it never leads anywhere good. Speaking of not leading anywhere good, you hear today's big joke?
I'm not 100% sure.
Well, this
I did see the hearing, and Ted Cruz was speaking for.
Oh, don't let's not even bring him up.
Okay.
My God, the guy goes to Orlando after going to Cancun. It's warmer in Orlando than in Cancun, and he's making jokes about going to Cancun, while the people in Texas are still recovering from their blizzard and power outages and rate hikes, and oh my God, I could just go on and on about
apologies.
This.
I didn't mean to bring
this guy
that.
Does nothing for his people. Why do they keep reelecting him? I don't get. There are such bad people. There are so many good people. There are so many bad people, and they just keep being put in power. And they keep cheating to stay in power with all kinds of voter suppression. Well, okay. The joke today is that our beloved local representative, Lee Zeldin, has decided he wants to run for governor of New York. You know, this is what I've been warning people about. Okay, you know, Andrew Cuomo has a lot of issues, as it's become quite clear. And the sexual harassment that is being brought to light, that is not something you come back from. And if that is shown to be true or have any element of truth, I think he's finished. And I think we need to accept that. But that does not mean we change history. That does not mean that we say that everything that happened last year with regard to the COVID response was wrong. No, it wasn't. Yeah, there were mistakes, big mistakes. But the way New York State handled it compared to other states, and I'll bring up Florida, where more people died in nursing homes. Many states, more people died in nursing homes. No, you don't get to do that. You don't get to rewrite history and say he was as bad as Trump or worse than Trump, some people are even saying. You don't get to say anything about this if you won't even criticize Trump at all. And the fact of maneuvering or manipulating numbers, I don't have all the facts on how the numbers are being manipulated, but did that make more people die? I don't think it did. And that's all I care about right now is, were the right steps taken to keep the death toll down? New York had the highest death toll at the beginning, and turned around and brought it way down because of social distancing, because of the things that were hammered into our heads day after day after day at those gubernatorial press conferences. So that matters. That counts. We can't forget that. Does it mean he's not a scumbag for the things that he's alleged to have done? Absolutely not. Absolutely, and he should pay the price for that. And that price could very well mean leaving office. But Democrats have to be smart here. They have to plan, because people like Lee Zeldin are slinking in the mud waiting. And the reason I say that is because if you look at his history, he has always been trying to get Cuomo on something. And it's never worked. It's never worked. Now, the sexual harassment allegations, yeah, that is something that Cuomo can be gotten on. Absolutely. But not by people like Lee Zeldin. Lee Zeldin is a sexual harassment enabler, because he does not criticize people who have been accused of multiple sexual harassment charges, even rape. He says nothing when Trump's horrible words are brought to light on tape. He does nothing to fight back against policies that have been shown to kill hundreds of thousands of people. Not a word of criticism. You don't get to to tell somebody you didn't handle the nursing home thing, right? No, you don't get to do that if you're protecting the guy that really did all the damage. You don't get to do that. You are the last person with any moral standing here. So step back and let people who actually have some moral standing take care of this. And I think we've seen a lot of that. We've seen a lot of people in the Democratic Party that are standing up and doing the right thing. But again, they have to be smart about this, because people like Lee Zeldin will be popping up all over the place trying to take over, trying to draw attention away from their crimes, from the people they protect, you know, from Republicans who have done far worse and somehow never are called to account. And that is something that you cannot let them get away with. So, yeah, deal with this. Deal with this situation. It's a bad situation, but it doesn't have to be a fatal situation. We have a perfectly good lieutenant governor. I've been looking into her record, Kathy Hochul, who I'm probably pronouncing the name wrong, Hochul. I honestly didn't know about her before. Looked into her record. She's fairly progressive. I'm sure progressives will want somebody more progressive. And you know what? You have until next year to come up with somebody who can win. But the important thing is, you have to win. You have to keep somebody in power who will do what you want and not hand this over to Republicans. They even dusted off Pataki. Did you see this? Our last Republican governor. I didn't even think he was still around at all. But they, all of a sudden, he's commenting about how evil Cuomo is. Shut up. You have no standing whatsoever here. Just get out of the way. My God. So, yeah, Lee Zeldin thinks he can run for governor. This is the guy that tried to overturn the election. He voted to overturn the damn election. He voted against COVID relief for people here on Long Island and everywhere in the country. This is not a good person. This is not a good person, but they are popping up all over the place at the first sign of trouble. And Democrats have to be ready for that. The difference is, Democrats will go after somebody for doing something wrong. Republicans will not. In the eyes of Lee Zeldin, rape allegations, it's okay if you're a Republican. But if you're a Democrat, no way. We'll replace you with somebody who gets away with it better. So, yeah, this, I just saw this today, and I it's like my worst nightmare. You know, we've been warning people about this guy for years. Keeps getting reelected, and
is this like a promotion, or is this just a kind of like he gets on desk duty as governor to replace what in terms of the crises there now? I mean, I don't understand. Is he being, because it's kind of like rewarding whatever we perceive of his leadership now with this, just give him more power or like more state. Centralized state power, not just the district. Now,
he thinks, you know? It's a promotion. This is what he says. I enjoy what I do in Congress. I'll bet you do, you sadist. I'm in my fourth term now, moving up in seniority. So he's got a plan. He's very calculating. I believe Republicans are likely to take back the House in 2022. If Democrats aren't strategic, that could happen. You've got to be strategic. Show that you're doing the right thing, and that's why you deserve to stay in power. You know, do things that help people. That's why you deserve to stay in power. Don't cover up. And there are going to be corrupt politicians in your group that you'll have to deal with. The difference is, how do you deal with them? How do Republicans deal with them? And I think this is an opportunity. The whole Cuomo thing is an opportunity to show how Democrats deal with this kind of thing. And if they're smart, they'll come out all the stronger.
And raise up other voices and mentor people in the right ways to really expand the representation in many fold in response. I think those are the kinds of things I think you would hope, you would aspire to, anybody in this position with a party that's undergoing that kind of change.
Interesting times.
It's fascinating stuff. It seems so varied, all the different types of things going on. but that's just a small sampling. But I feel like we're almost running out of time, and I really wanted to get to something that was. Well, do we still have that thing?
I throw the switch. Do you always? Do you want
I replaced
to?
The fuse. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
it's working now. I think.
No, it's not. Did you plug it in?
Hold on. Tap it.
No, it's not. Look at that. It's unplugged. Plug it in. Okay. And just like that, smoothly and without any fanfare, is our sustaining feature. Why isn't it working? Okay, wait, there we go. Yes, it's another exciting edition of Films of the Year That Was, which is our look back at Academy Award-winning movies from each year in sequential order. We are currently up to 19 and 92, and we saw the domestic film with Clint Eastwood last week, and this week we saw the foreign film, which is, I believe, pronounced Indochine. Is that how you... It's Indochina, Indochine. I think it's Indochine. That sounds
Indochine.
More French. Yeah.
I would definitely... I think Indochine.
It's a French film.
Oui.
But it's about the colonial period of Vietnam, where before the Vietnam War. Not it's such an unhappy...
1930, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think of it?
Well, it is really interesting because it talks about a certain area of trade, namely rubber and the plantations around that.
I didn't know rubber came from trees.
Isn't that amazing how it's harvested and stuff?
I am always eager to confess how ignorant I am. I don't know where I thought rubber came from. I didn't think it came from... It's like maple syrup. You just get it out of a... Can I plant a rubber tree in the backyard and have my own source of rubber?
You too could do the very same thing with your own rubber tree.
Because I'll do it.
It is like maple syrup.
I'll do it.
They're tapped, and there's a certain kind of cut that you see over and over again in many of the scenes in this film. I love how it showed this real austere work environment with the fog. And really, it is Catherine Elaine, played by Catherine Deneuve.
Her name was Catherine in both the film and in real life. That always makes it easier.
No, her name is Elaine Devry.
Oh, you said Cat. Okay.
I misread it. I just want to be absolutely sure. Played by Catherine Deneuve. And she runs this plantation... after a family, it was run by a family member, and she takes over.
The parents of this young girl are killed. She adopts the young girl and somehow inherits this massive rubber plantation. Seems like a scheme to me, you know, that she just sort of stepped in there and got all this land.
That's true, yeah. Her widowed father, Henry Martu, I guess, plays him. Anyway, the story itself centers around this sentiment growing about colonialism. And you see just this awful treatment, just the attitudes of, like, and the entitlement of, like, people running and employing plantations.
Like, it was disgusting.
She works these people on her plantation ridiculously hard and just with no thought to them... as people. They're just
they're not
part
people.
Of this machine that she is running full bore, trying to outdo and sustain themselves in face of really a lot of upset over the conditions.
She was the sympathetic character, and she treated people like garbage, like they weren't even human. And we're supposed to think she had any ounce of good in her.
So that's how you start, is somehow this plantation owner is our sympathetic protagonist here.
But, you know, seeing this film, it got me kind of depressed, because we've seen a number of films lately, Dancing with Wolves, Out of Africa, films where the white man, not to become too jingoistic here, but the white man goes into Africa, the white man goes into Asia, the white man goes into America, and the white man is also still in Europe, doing all these horrible things, treating people like utter scum, and getting away with it, destroying cultures and civilizations. It really, it's an eye-opener. You realize, boy, this is, we have a lot to make up for. And, you know, people are upset that we're shouldering guilt. We've earned it. We've earned, our race has definitely earned it. Just looking at all the history throughout the world, and this not even starting with the Vietnam War. This is before that, how that was all set up. There are so many places on Earth where I'm just embarrassed, you know, embarrassed to be related to this. And I really, really hope that we are getting to a point where this is recognized and we can somehow put it behind us, unite with people, move forward.
I think the word is reconciliation. We need to reckon with some serious reconciliation.
Yeah.
And if we do not, as a species, I feel we're really, really, really doomed. And there's a lot of ideas. There's a lot of academic kind of study and a real earnest, sincere research and pathways to that, and techniques and ways to do it. It's been done.
Yeah, but do you think anybody at CPAC over the weekend would be open to a conversation about reconciliation? No. They feel they're the victims. They feel they're the ones that are being oppressed and downtrodden and victimized by all the minorities of the world and all the other countries of the world. My God, it's just have to look at history a little bit. Look at some of these films and you realize how messed up the world has become and how it's really on us. And that's why it's on us to start fixing it. Yeah, start, because I don't think we've started yet. Anyway, let's go back to the film. It was an enjoyable picture.
Yeah, let's get through this. it was really constantly those kinds of things on your mind as you're going through this. Do you remember? It's the irony is that, like, she was there was a family that was, they had their boat burned because they were found to be smugglers by one of these guys that she associates with, who is a colonel. Or Navy Lieutenant Jean-Baptiste.
Yeah, I didn't like him.
Father
and son in the boat.
Yeah.
Vietnamese. And they were out. Actually, the boat was out, I think, 5 minutes after this arbitrary rule that says boats can't be out. So the penalty for that is to have your boat burned while you're still on the damn boat. So this guy says, I had no choice. It's the rules. So I had to burn them. And then later on, he appears and starts looking for these people and seems somewhat relieved to find them. And turns out they were smugglers anyway, so I guess that sort of absolves him of guilt. But because it bothered him a little bit that he had sentenced people to death by burning the boat, and he looked for them and they fortunately had survived somehow, that made him a redeemable character? No, I still hated him.
Yeah,
and he was another sympathetic character that we had to follow through the whole film.
Really, it is a real a mental leap to get there in the story. But you're okay, so you're along for that, and it's weird how they sort of depict and show the opium culture a little bit more than you'd ever really get a glimpse of in this sort of remote colony. And she herself ends up smoking and becoming a regular partaker member of the opium dens that are shown, which I think is really interesting in and of itself.
There's not enough opium she could take to get past what she's done.
She's at one point, you know, rescued, sort of yanked out of there to just get through to her. And I think that's really interesting because it's a depiction of something that did occur in a lot of different periods of time over history and was important aspect to show in their sort of moral or whatever, not turpitude, but just failings or turmoil, tumults in what they're going through in all of their own abuse. They're sort of awful to themselves in a certain way, very abusive to themselves in a certain way. So there's something in that.
My heart bleeds for them, but what they're doing to the other people is unforgivable.
Well, it's also like kind of the desensitizing who mm-hmm. they to kind of kill away their sort of feeling or empathy.
How do we get like this? It's just, I hope the next films we see are more, no, they're not. They're not more cheerful, are they? Wow. Okay. I just got a glimpse of what our next
anyway,
films.
They sail away and go to Cancun. No, I'm sorry.
Do they?
No. They go off to these remote islands, and they're on a boat, and it's kind of like a cruise, and this thing called the Dragon Islet, and it's a very famous bunch of islands in Vietnam. And so anyway, the location shooting and so on is really breathtaking from that point.
Yes.
You're seeing this natural environment and the water. It goes on and on from there. But eventually they're imprisoned and they have to pay.
Who's imprisoned?
Camille.
Camille is the daughter. Okay, we didn't really talk about her.
No, we didn't.
Okay, she's in prison because she's trying to liberate her people from all the colonialists. The people who should be in prison were the colonialists themselves. But
it's just really hard to feel bad for anybody in this. Like, anyway, we could go on and on about the nuance.
Unfortunately, we can't because our time is up. We'll have more films to talk about. There's a lot we could say. We could do the whole hour about films.
Screw it. I can't.
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating seeing them. It's frustrating talking about them, but it's important to confront them.
There's a lot more there. Just we don't have
time. Can I quickly say that more vaccination sites are opening up? And in fact, 24-hour vaccinations are beginning. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is arriving in New York, and it's going to be at various, let's see what we have here.
I heard
very
also.
Yankee Stadium from 8 p.m. to 7 a.m. starting on Thursday. Yes, that's overnight. Javits Center, 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. New York State Fair site, that's in Syracuse, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Go to New York State vaccine sites and see what which ones are available.
And that's just the first batch from them. I heard there is a unconfirmed or unofficial report that the pharmaceutical company Merck, who had a failed vaccine, is going to take over or ramp up in the next 2 months production of the same virus or vaccine, not virus. Same adenovirus.
You know how many times people mix up those two words? It's really something.
The adenovirus-based vaccine. So they're going to help the J&J vaccine.
I think it's just
even more prolific.
It's so moving when mega corporations cooperate with each other, don't you think?
Why I'm getting so choked up and misty about it, I don't know. But yeah, hooray for those industries for stepping up, and they're doing what needs to be done for society, for this country, and many others, because those vaccines are going to go much further than our borders.
Well, we are out of time. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. We would love to hear from you. Have a good night.
So long.
Stay tuned for Fanny's coming up next here on WUSB. We will see you again in 1 week.
Hey, yeah, enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
should lock her away and scrape the makeup off her skin. Then we'd see the warts around her chin. She tried to keep her looks but lost her mind when she lost her youth and grace. Your words were just an insult to her face. Somebody else is like that.